My favorite part was the aliens.
What do you know? It's as short as we go. A quick outtake while we make a break. It's a mini episode.
Hello and welcome to another mini-sode of You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre. I'm the Mike, and this week, the history of Mad Bread. Since we had Nate and Adam on last week, we talked about how we started the band and some of the members we've had over the years. You can check out Mad Bread on YouTube, SoundCloud, Bandcamp, and Spotify. Or right here as I recorded one of our original songs at the end of this episode. Until then, enjoy this.
I'm going to cheat, Mike. I would be remiss with the three of you on the show to not at least ask a little bit about Mad Bread, how that formed. I think you did. Am I mistaken? Were you able to have a mini reunion of at least part of the members recently, or am I mistaken?
We do it anytime they come back to Chicago, because you guys, I met Nate when we were working at a coffee shop together in Chicago, and we just started kind of playing songs on the side. And at that point, I think, were you already playing with Joel at that point?
I knew Joel. Adam and I have known Joel since high school. We were high school buddies. He's Adam's age, so 2 years older than me. Mike, you and I first met, it was weird. I had a weird like 6 months where I was hanging around Chicago. I did 1 year of college and then moved back to Chicago for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. And that's when you and I met and started playing together. And then we would see each other on and off, right? When I'd go back to school and come back home, we'd hang out. But it was after that I moved to Chicago. I moved in with Adam and Joel, who, you know, Adam's my older brother. Joel I'd known for years. So by that point, we'd all kind of started to play guitar and we're starting to work up a band. And, you know, I said, we got to get Mike in to play bass with us because he's a way better musician than any of us.
I just remember coming over just like to your guys' house, just hanging out there playing songs. And you were saying, yeah, we got some songs we played, but I don't know if we'll ever want to play these out. And just the first time hearing like you and Joel present these songs, wow, this is amazing. They said you guys had like very good songwriting chops, which is very difficult to find. I mean, even if you're, you know, self-taught as musicians, because you guys had listened to a broad variety of music growing up. Your parents were great influences on that, and it always played a little. And just to see Adam, especially you, like, you played banjo fairly proficiently already at that point.
That's very nice of you to say that. Yes, you don't, it doesn't take much to be a good banjo player by comparison. Yeah, so yeah, basically, Nate, I think, summarized it pretty well. We were all just kind of hanging out, playing music, and I had picked up the music thing after Nate did. Actually, he's the younger brother, but he started guitar many years before I did, and then he inspired Joel to get started on guitar, and so I basically came back like sophomore year of college or something like that and said, these two guys, if these two idiots can do it, I can play guitar. So I picked up a guitar, and then eventually that morphed into a banjo. The funny thing was, like, I got into the banjo originally because I was like, oh, this will teach me how to be good at finger picking on guitar, and I ended up playing banjo for 15 years. But these days I'm mostly playing guitar. So in a way, that prophecy came true because I barely ever touch the banjo anymore when I'm playing around the house.
Yeah. So I would just go over to your guys' place and just, yeah, we got to go out and start playing. So you guys really inspired me to start just knocking on doors for a while. We played like Sylvie's and a couple other just like dive bars for a while around Chicago. And that's when Carl, who I had played with the previous band, he started playing with us, that kind of formed the core of it. It was mostly the four of us, because Joel was in and out over the years from being a lawyer, not being a lawyer, starting a family and stuff.
Yeah, there was the core four of the three of us plus Carl with a few other members that were here periodically. But yeah, that was the real base of it.
We had a fiddle player for a while. Mark was with us for many years on cajon and drum kit.
Yeah. And at one point we were at a pretty good clip. I mean, we were playing 2, 3, 4 shows a month. Some of them were not, you know, the most glamorous shows in the world, basically rehearsal in a bar. But we did have a period there where we played probably, you know, 20 shows or more a year for several years in a row.
And we did 3 albums. 2 of them I know are on Spotify. I think maybe 1 we don't have up there right now, but or maybe never got it up there.
They're all on Bandcamp. I mean, it's our 1st and 3rd album are on Spotify, and nobody knows exactly how they got there. But the 2nd album is only available on Bandcamp right now. So if you search up Mad Bread, you know, on Spotify, Bandcamp, YouTube, you can hear our stuff.
I also have 500 CDs in my garage in a box.
Oh, that's where they went. We were wondering who they got unloaded on.
So show up at Adam's house and you can walk away with this.
Yes, I've been meaning to tell you guys, tomorrow is garbage day, and I think I'm going to give those things the old heave-ho.
Interesting. It's part of the patreon.com/JeffMay family, which does involve sending things in the mail. And I was even going to start bugging Jeff more because one of his co-hosts, Andrea Gazzetta, sends stuff in the mail. But I also understand that, you know, someone who just went through a major move, that a giant box of CDs is not one of those things that travels easy, stores easily, or ships easily, right? Shipping wise.
That was a joke. I'll send them to you if you want. I mean,
interesting. At some point we might have to figure out a way, Mike, about getting people Mad Bread CD. You know,
we would keep them here and send them out constantly if we had them. So we'll talk to you later about that, Adam.
One nerdy thing for myself, which is Muppets make a recurring appearance on this show. Just really,
why would that be, Dre?
Coming pretty good friends, Mike. At the risk of possibly offending you, you do have a Muppetish quality to you. I will say one of my favorite songs ever is Tomorrow, and there is a version of it that is done on the Muppet Show with Frank Oz and Jim Henson. And I think there is even a banjo in their version. And I'm just curious, a request, if you've ever done this, if Mad Bread has never done a version of Tomorrow.
From Annie? Tomorrow.
Oh, that's the good one. That's I Love You Tomorrow. Tomorrow is a great song about a guy trying to get on a train to a town called Morrow and this hilarious Who's On First discussion.
We did try to cover Moving Right Along, and Carl would often bust out Rubber Ducky at rehearsal.
That's what we're doing now, too, because, you know, after to finish off like the Mad Bread saga and everything, you guys ended up moving away to Florida and Maine shortly after COVID. And I picked up the band again. I found a new bass player. So I learned how to play like electric guitar and picked up mandolin. We've just been playing back at the Celtic Knot every couple months again. And I think that's going to kind of be what we're going to be just doing for a while.
Which is awesome. Was always one of my favorite places to play. And they have a new location that's super great. Yeah, very good to see those guys back in business after COVID.
Yep, that was just one of our regular gigs all the time, and they closed down for a couple of years. Yeah, it's good to have that back.
Yeah, actually, not to mention it, Dre, Mike's Muppet-like quality. I kind of want to posit that Mike's a little bit like the entire Muppet band combined. You've got like a little bit of Dr. T, a little bit of Animal, a little bit of Rolf.
I love it. I forget, the saxophonist, right? The glasses.
Hey, man, we're going to have a good time today at the show.
Absolutely. I was curious how any of the music hit on this show. That is a thing I keep bringing up, where Christopher Frank is the composer. They did do like orchestral music. And I think if we're comparing this to Star Trek, that is one thing that maybe sets it a little apart, where Star Trek, the special effects, the acting, the prosthetics may look better, but the music of this show always really got it.
Of Babylon 5? I'm going to disagree with you on two of those points and agree with you on one, which is the music, I've already forgotten it. Like, none of the music stuck on me at all. But where I am going to give this show a lot of credit, this is definitely on my list of stuff that I jotted down that I really liked about Babylon 5, is I thought the prosthetics were way more impressive than most Star Trek shows. In the realm of the kind of the makeups and the practical stuff, I thought there were a lot of cool visual ideas about Babylon 5.
Yeah, we'll get to that, especially in this one, because the Narn are really good. And Jakar gets a couple really good episodes here where you really get a lot of screen time with him. And he's one of the best made of effects.
Yeah, and I always remember, I always chuckle, because that actor who plays him is named Andreas Katsoulis. He's somebody that I've always recognized most for being the one-armed man in the Fugitive movie with Harrison Ford. So much so that ran across him a couple times on IMDb. You just be like, look, watching something and browsing around on IMDb. What else have I seen this actor in? And I always remember Andreas Katsoulis, if I saw him in something, his like main profile pic on IMDb was not a headshot. It was in the full Babylon 5 makeup. And he was one of my favorite parts of watching just these couple episodes. He's a really good character actor. You know, his main scene in that Fugitive movie was with Tommy Lee Jones, and he stole the scene from Tommy Lee Jones. Like, he's doing a lot with kind of a you know, workmanlike 90s TV script.
Yeah, him and Peter Jurasik are both really great in their roles as Londo and Jakar in this. And any episodes that where you get a lot of those are definitely the better episodes, or at least more fun to watch or memorable.
Agreed. Okay, thanks, Mike. Yeah, you know, I love Music Hako, though. It is amusing. This might show my, you know, oh my God, I got to tell you about this amazing restaurant, McDonald's. The music is great. And I bring it to a band, and you're all like, ah.
I was going to say pretty much the same thing before Nate stepped in, too. The music is good background orchestral music. It sets a mood is what he does really well with it. But he doesn't make a memorable theme. It's, you're not going to go around humming it or get it stuck in your head like the Star Trek theme is going to come in your head once in a while.
Or like the Avengers, I'd say, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that's the best music. It's a good user interface is one that you don't even notice, right? Like, it's one of those things where maybe it, the music is not trying to do too much work or be a theme or whatever, but it did set the mood. And I mean, yep. I felt like it did. I did get more engrossed in the show than I thought that I might. And there was probably subconsciously the music was a big part of that.
Oh, yeah. Always the music. There's, it means so much more to the audiovisual experience than we give it credit for.
Yeah. Can we sidebar about that? What's the deal with that? So there are humans in this show.
Yes. So, and this is like Earth history. So there is actually an episode in season one where they rebuild an old motorcycle from Earth that just happens to be from 1995.
Okay.
So there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on. But yeah, supposedly this is Earth's history and he's just really into Looney Tunes.
And obvious behind the scenes, Warner Brothers was the big studio that, you know, was the parent company. And so if you needed IP you had access to and wanted to reference something historical on Earth, Garibaldi's really into old Earth television. And to show it off, he's like, I love the Looney Tunes. They're going to have the license. And I remember around this time, this is Space Jam. They were trying to bring the Looney Tunes back.
Yeah, I got to say, this is one of my points of Star Trek comparison where I preferred Star Trek. They always went to very classy stuff. It was operetta. Yeah, it was Sherlock Holmes. It was old, you know, detective stories that Picard liked to do in the holodeck. Daffy Duck see the little weird and discordant as a thing to throw in.
It's a lot more like lowbrow culture in Babylon 5, too. I mean, there's a whole subsection of the ship called the Down Below that they do a lot more in than they ever did on Star Trek, where people who don't get jobs at the station are actually like relegated to. It's like a whole bartering homeless town that's, you know, thousands upon thousands of people live there.
Yeah, I noticed when what's his name was going off to look for Garibaldi, too, he put on kind of like a jaunty fedora. Like his adventuring hat on his big alien head.
Let's say the adventuring hat, because that appears a lot whenever Garibaldi decides to go cosplaying as a detective.
Oh, so this was something Garibaldi wore. Is
that's
like,
Garibaldi's like funny detective hat that he had on.
It put me in mind of Captain Picard's holodeck event. He would do that. He would do like the old, you know, 30s L.A. noir private investigator story. So he had a little jaunty fedora for when he was playing. So that's a pretty much a straight pull.
Yeah, it's like he gets his own little detective plot, which like you guys didn't see any of the episodes before, but any chance Garibaldi got to have his own little side adventure as a detective, he put on that hat and went off. So it's nice to see that come to Jakar, who gets to like, he had a relationship. Garibaldi was one of the only main characters who was really nice to Jakar from the start. So it's kind of nice to see him being able to go after it and try and pay him back with, let's find out what happened to him.
So I get the impression he's a pretty main character, but the two episodes we saw, I think the only scene we actually see with Garibaldi is he's like in a jail cell or something and flipping out. I kind of wish that I'd seen more of the show where he was in it, because it seems like just from context clues and what other people say about him, he's kind of a character with more personality, more kind of passion, which I think sometimes could be a shortcoming of sci-fi shows where they kind of play everybody as very stoic and serious, and having somebody that's a little bit more like impulsive or passionate or angry.
Did Warner Brothers own the rights to Dick Tracy? Because there could have been a cross promotion for the 90s Dick Tracy movie, maybe.
Man, that would have been so, if we could go back and just change all of the Garibaldi hats, Mike, to Dick Tracy fedora.
Did any other Warner Brothers cartoon, you know, Looney Tunes make it on the show? Did they have a little dancing frog that they used to use to promote the WB channel or anything?
On the final episode of the final season, do you find out the shadows are like the Animaniacs in disguise with them?
That would be good. Yeah, there are like two or three clips of just Looney Tunes. I think that's all we see.
I kind of tried to start a podcast with each of you guys separately that almost together would become this podcast, because Nate and I recorded with Karen. I think we recorded about 5 or 6 episodes of a Star Trek, the original series podcast, where we were comparing episodes of the original series to the Next Generation.
Oh, that's cool.
And I think I still have those files, which may appear as a bonus content if I ever decide to pull them together and edit something together. But then, Adam, you and I were bouncing around an idea to start a podcast where we would introduce each other to our own nerdy interests on each episode.
I remembered us talking about something where we would review a bunch of stuff that doesn't normally get a review. And you told me about that Comedy Central show called Review or whatever. But I would be like, you know, do a review, movie review or book review style of, you know, whatever, having brunch with your parents or whatever, like just any rant. It could be anything, but we would just kind of review it and say, oh, is it, what's your opinion of, you know?
That's right. I forgot. That's because we did throw that around idea too for a while. I think they were like, it gestated in my mind as just us talking about things that we liked and trying to find a hook into it.
Yeah. I remembered it as being of like doing a review of more like everyday things, like test driving a car. What's your favorite part of test driving a car? What did you like or not like or whatever?
My favorite part is when the dealer keeps saying, what's it going to take to get you into this car? Even when you told them initially, I'm not buying today.
Yeah.
Put a Vorlon in me and we'll see what happens.
Nice callback.
Start calling you Sheridan. Put a Vorlon in me. He's Sheridan. It took me till at least maybe the third time through to realize that the guards that are chasing after him, they've got like almost literal red coats from the British Empire and the Centurion hats. I didn't realize those are supposed to be Centauri, because the only mark that you can tell is that a race is Centauri is from their hair. And they covered it up with those big helmets. So my question, like, why is Babylon 5 security dressed like that? And why do they want Jakar so bad?
I did chuckle at the jackets. I was like, the costumes look like, you know, leftovers from Mel Gibson's The Patriot or something. Great British Empire jackets.
Yeah, I was going to say marching band. Big marching band. And it looked like they kind of put like the gold helmets on from the football team. It was like a mashup of what you'd see on the sidelines. Yeah. No, but maybe I'll do a quick music plug for you Chicago music fans. If you've never seen Mucha Paza, they're like a punk rock marching band. They're not really punk, but whatever. They're like this super interesting marching band. And that was my impression of who are these marching band characters. Maybe it's just because I'd watched the Thanksgiving Day Parade or something like that a few days beforehand.
Yeah, but they build themselves a punk marching band, so yeah, that's accurate.
Cool. All right, I wasn't sure if I got the genre right.
They're a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, those were some distracting uniforms, and the helmets totally defeat the purpose of the main species signifier for that whole species. I didn't pick up on that either, that it was even the same, you know, species due to that missing sideways mohawk.
And that could potentially have been intentional. So I think those guards had shown up in a previous episode. So if you were looking, but if you weren't paying close enough attention, you might not realize the ominousness of it. But then, of course, there's so much dialogue setting it up that, like I said, it was almost like Rump, where, there wasn't any sense of tension because we're told it's dangerous and immediately shown it's dangerous. And it did feel more because I had to find a way to get Jakar to Centauri Prime, which, he did. And yeah, this episode does have a lot of dialogue and stuff moving pieces quickly, but it's not the worst I've seen.
All right. Are you guys ready? The first category is let's do buzzer practice.
Adam.
Yes. What's the answer?
Adam.
Close.
So close.
The question is, what is your last name?
Ah.
Adam already buzzed in, so Nate, you can buzz in. Yes.
Flint.
Nate Flint. Good. Good thing we had buzzer practice. Yeah, let's say your name and then the answer. So perfect. That'd be 1 point for Nate if this wasn't a practice question. I'm wiping the slate clean. We're going to start out with the first of the actual 5 questions.
Thanks again for listening. Please help us out while you're there. Rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. And now, as promised, Country Radio by Mad Brad. Cheers, all.
3, 4.
Thank you. like it when you drink and carry on. But you'll always come back to hear another sweet, sad song. You didn't have to tell me. Candy cigarettes get sold out in the street for what the poor can save and stretch. And everyone here agrees if they had somewhere else to go, this could be a nicer town. Country radio follows me everywhere I go. Up in Alaska, it's buried 6 feet deep in snow. It echoes through an empty factory in a forgotten town in Ohio. It might be underwater somewhere down in Louisiana. Cloud than the voice on my TV that always seems to scream and shout. And it's been such a long time since it said anything worth thinking about. It's starting to fade away. So why don't we tune back in to a love that was there before all of this ugliness began. And if we set our ways back to a different frequency and band, we can ride them higher and higher. Country radio follows me everywhere I go. Up in Alaska, it's buried 6 feet deep in snow. It echoes through an empty factory in a forgotten town in Ohio. Might be underwater somewhere down in Louisiana.
Hey, can you get, you guys had never guessed, this guy had never seen Aliens before a few months ago.
And I don't even understand it. My dad is a huge Ridley Scott fan. I've seen multiple versions of Blade Runner, right? And then it kind of turned into a bit over time where I was like, I haven't seen it, I would keep wouldn't. And then I saw it, and guys, spoiler, Alien and Aliens, really good.
Yeah, for sure.
My favorite part was the aliens.